Hey, next on the T Nation, thanks for tuning into this very special segment of the show featuring one of my all-time favorite people on the planet, let alone guests on the show, and that is Matthew Lawrence. We talk about everything that's going on in the world of golf right now. We're talking Tiger. We're talking Jason Day's pants. We're talking Keith Pelley leaving. We're talking Martin Slumbers leaving the RNA. Where is the PGA Tour going? Where is golf going? Do we care about what's happening on the PGA Tour? Because it doesn't really affect all of us. It's just the tour players and the product that we're watching on TV every week. So anyway, sit back, relax, enjoy this segment. And as always, I appreciate you all so very much. All right, now back with me is one of my all-time favorite actors, radio hosts, and people on the planet for that matter, and that is Matthew Lawrence. I closed out last season with Mitch Lawrence, so of course the best way to start a new season is by having Matthew Lawrence join me. You guys hear me talking about Matthew's show Backspin Golf all the time because A, it's fantastic, and B, it's one of the best ways you can start your Sunday mornings. You can stream the show by going online to WLXG.com. He also has a daily show that you can tune into from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time called The Matthew and Jimmy Show. In 2020, Matthew was recognized by the Kentucky section of the PGA of America as their media representative of the year for his great contributions to the game. And among Matthew's other work on the big screen is his stellar performance as bass player Sal Amato, one of my all-time favorite movies, Eddie and the Cruisers. You've probably seen Matthew as well on Saturday Night Live, Beverly Hills 90210. One Tree Hill or 30-something, among the many other things that he has been in movies and in TV. He's also been a sideline reporter and the pre- and post-game host for Duke basketball and now over in Kentucky for Kentucky basketball, and they don't come bigger or better than Matthew Lawrence. Happy New Year, Matthew. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm exhausted just listening to that. I'm exhausted. I'm fine. Thank you, Chris. And as always, it is my great pleasure and honor to be with you again. And I'm glad that we're speaking now because I have some breaking news. I have an announcement to make.
Oh.
And I'm glad that it'll be on next on the tee, the best golf podcast in the history of Earth. Here is the breaking news. Couple days have been a whirlwind of the biggest names in football, both college and pro, retiring or leaving for somewhere else. I am announcing my retirement from professional golf.
What?
On your show. Yes. Yeah.
Say it isn't so.
Well, I've been doing it for so long, Chris. It's hard. It's hard trying to get into tournaments and, you know, it's not easy to get into a professional tournament when you're a 14 handicap. It's just, it's not that easy. So I've decided that I'm going to pursue other options. and I just wanted this to be the place where I broke that news. So well, thank you.
I appreciate you doing it on this show. And look, as Andrew Strother said on this show a couple of weeks ago, I mean, you've got the sweetest practice swing in the history of the game. I can't imagine we're not going to get to see that anymore.
Well, I can have Andrew take a video of it and send it to you. Here's the thing about that. And Andrew Strother is just, he's so great. And for those of you that might have missed, although I can't believe this, that episode of Next on the Tee with Andrew. Andrew is an incredible golfer, has played on various different tours all over the place. And he is now with TrackMan. He's the area representative for TrackMan. He's a fantastic guy. And I did not know him. And we were invited to play in the... pretty sure it was the Barbasol Championship here in Lexington, the media day. They had a scramble tournament. And I was on a team with Andrew. And as I said, I didn't really know him. I was told what a great golfer he was and a great guy and all this. And I show up on the first tee. And as I mean, you know me well enough now, Chris, to know how I'm very kind of subdued when I meet new people. You know, it takes me a while before I kind of warm up to people. I don't like to go after them, for example. And on the first tee, it started on the first tee between the two of us, and it lasted the whole day. But here's the thing. It's one thing when people say, what a great golfer this guy is. But we were playing in this scramble, and it on the great golf course, the Keene Trace, where they played the Barbasol Championship. And we get up on the first tee, and I'm hitting, you know, when I'm absolutely destroying the ball, it goes 220. Now, I mean, I never hit it far, even when I was a 5 handicap. But now I'm 96 years old, and, you know, it takes a little for me to get it out there anyway. So, and the scramble, we were using the best drive. We had, I guess, 5 people on the team, maybe 4, I don't remember. Anyway, Andrew gets up and hits it about 340 right down the middle. And I'm not exaggerating. I think we were on a par 5 we started, and he hit it over the trees and, you know, like you see on a Sunday on the PGA Tour. And I just kind of looked at him, and that gave me even more reason to give him crap, because that's how I am. And so then I get up to hit, and I take my 2 practice swings, and I'm joking around because I don't want to be embarrassed. And he didn't say anything, and I hit a pretty good drive, and we take off. Well, by about the 4th hole, and I really didn't hit a shot at all. The first, actually, about the first 9 holes. But we're on the tee on about the 4th hole. He turns to me, and he says, you know, that may be the most perfect practice swing I've ever seen. And the thing is, it's true. If you just saw my practice swing, you'd think this guy's a pro. He's a pro. And then I get up and I hit the ball, and I'm not, clearly. Well, it lasted. He gave me crap about my practice swing the entire day. And he was right. He was right. Somehow I can't translate it to actually hitting the ball. And I've tried everything, believe me. but I do have a great practice swing, and Andrew is just, he's great. He's a wonderful guy. Yeah.
So please send a video, because now everyone's going to want to see it. So you got to get someone to videotape that practice swing. We got to post that somewhere.
Well, I will, except it's going to be like Kansas City on Sunday. It's supposed to be about, I don't know, 2 below here for the next few days. Yeah, we have good stuff coming. So maybe it might be like maybe the right before the Masters, I'll send you a video.
That's good. We can tease that out. People look forward to it. Yeah. We got, you know, okay. Anticipation is everything.
Okay. Hey, it's almost time for the practice swing. All right. I like that. Good.
So you mentioned Keene Trace. One of the things I want our listeners to learn about, Matthew, is you've got so many great golf courses in and around you there in Lexington, Kentucky, really all across the state. Talk about how great golf is where you're at.
You know, when I got here, I've been coming here for 35 years. My first trip was, I was invited to play, this was during my acting career, in the Children's Charity Golf Tournament that was no longer being played, but for 35 years, it was the best tournament we had in terms of giving back to the community. Every year, the amount of money raised for different charities here was astounding. And it was a big family. The same people would come back every year with a couple new people, and it was fantastic. And I knew, but I was either living in New York or in LA, and I would come for 3 days or maybe 4 days and play the golf courses we were playing the tournament at. And it wasn't until I moved here, which is hard to believe, 14 years ago now, that I really got to play all over. And starting with the five public golf courses here in Lexington. And I am incredibly blessed that those five courses are part of Lexington Parks and Rec, and they are, and have been since I started, a sponsor of Backspin Golf. And the just the best people, Curtis and Justin and all these amazing people. And so I get to play all of these public golf courses, and they're amazing. And they're all very different. There are four great courses and a nine-hole course, which is part of our Rota here, as I like to call it. One of the courses, Kearney Hill Golf Links, is as good a public course as you can play. I don't care where you play. It's a Pete Dye golf course. They have amazing championships there. As a matter of fact, the senior tour used to play at that golf course every year. And now they have all kinds of USGA, the boys' championship, the girls' championship, junior championships. It's an amazing golf course. And then we have all around the state. The public golf courses in the state of Kentucky are phenomenal. And of course, we have great private clubs here too. But I like to concentrate on the public courses here and all over, really. We have amazing golf in the state of Kentucky in terms of the growth of the game and how many people play and how many great golfers play in this state. It's quite amazing, actually. But in terms of golf, Kentucky is it's a great place to live.
And Matthew, the PGA Championship is going to be back in Kentucky this year, a little west of you, over at Louisville at Valhalla. Have you ever played there?
I've never played there. I've been there, and it's quite amazing. But you know what I'm going to do? I think you gave me an idea. I'm going to send them a video of my practice swing, and I think maybe that might be a way for me to get on at Valhalla. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Of course, once they see that, you're in.
Oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't you be?
Yes.
And get that guy on the phone. Let's get him over here. We got a tea time right for you. Mr. Lawrence, right this way.
Yeah. And it'll be four above zero, but I don't care. I'll play. I don't care. And of course, Valhalla, your listeners might remember when Tiger Woods and Bob May had that incredible playoff, Bob May out of nowhere, and Tiger Woods won the PGA Championship there in the dark. You know, they had the car headlights on the 18th green. But Valhalla is an amazing golf course, really amazing.
Matthew, speaking of Tiger, he's been in the news as usual, and now it's that he and Nike are no longer going to partner together, which we knew was coming from what Tiger was saying or wasn't saying back at the Hero World Challenge. I know what a big Tiger fan you are. Are you surprised
that
these two are, you know, going their separate ways 27 years later?
You know, I don't think this is the truth. Nothing surprises me anymore, Chris. I swear. Every day you get up and there are things going on and you just shake your head. When I heard about this, today on Matthew and Jimmy, I was talking with Jimmy about this because Jimmy is not a golfer. And although he's produced some of my Backspin shows and he's gotten a lot better actually with his knowledge, and I kid around with him all the time, but he was talking about it. He asked me about it today. And I said, you know, I just read an amazing article about Nike Golf. And when he signed with Nike, I believe it was in 97, I think, when he turned pro, they had their entire, they only made something like, and this isn't the correct figure, but it's an illustration. They were only making $10 million a year. And in the first year after he signed with them for their golf apparel and clubs, it went up to $150 million. I mean, he's made them over the 27 years, I guess, that he's been with them. I'm not worried about Nike, you know, and people forget that he played Nike golf clubs for a long time. It wasn't just the apparel. It was a Nike golf ball. We all remember the iconic shot of the ball rolling into the hole with the Nike swoosh on it. For a very long time, he hasn't played. Nike decided one year they were going to stop making clubs, and he's been with TaylorMade clubs, and he plays a Bridgestone ball now. So I don't think I can say I was surprised. It's actually kind of amazing, and I'll give a shout out to Bob Harrig, the great, great golf writer for Sports Illustrated, who I just had a conversation with about many things, but I asked him about that also. And, you know, he said, and this is true. The funny thing is, people that don't really follow golf know about Tiger wearing red on Sunday, as he has always done, black pants and a red shirt, which has always had that Nike swoosh on it. And there are people, they're idiots, but there are people who have actually said, like on Twitter, is he going to continue to wear red on Sundays? Like Nike is the only one that makes red shirts on Sundays. I got hysterical when Bob said that. I was like, who knows? My feeling is he may start his own company, his own apparel company. I know the Tiger Woods brand has been part of Nike. He may just continue with his own company. He may go with TaylorMade because he plays their club. I don't know, but I can't say I was really surprised.
Whose end do you think this came on to decide that we're going to go our separate ways? Because I can't imagine, to your earlier point, I mean, he's the golden goose. Why would Nike want to go a different direction? Like, to your point, they got out of the equipment world, right? They don't, no clubs, no golf balls anymore. Okay.
Right.
It's not like they're getting out of the apparel business. So why would you want to go a different direction than getting, you know, the guy to wear yourself?
Well, I think that you've answered your own question there, Chris Mascaro. And that answer would be, this is Tiger's decision. I don't think this is coming from Phil Knight or Nike at all. I mean, even though Tiger, you know, he's only going to play a certain amount of tournaments now, and he's getting older and all blah, 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 and all that stuff. It doesn't matter because people still, you're right, they buy Nike apparel because of Tiger Woods, period. So I would say it's probably something that Tiger wants to do. And maybe when we see what's coming next for him, we'll all go, oh, okay, now I get it. Now I see why.
Yeah,
he's a pretty smart guy, that Tiger Woods guy.
So since you say nothing surprises you anymore, you weren't stunned when you got the news that Jon Rahm was going to live?
It's a really good question. I was stunned, I think, as we all were. After the stunned part of it, I shook my head and I went, well, of course he is, because that's the way things are now, especially in the world of golf. We have no idea what is going to happen now in the world of professional golf. The only reason that I think everybody was so shocked was we all saw the video of Jon Rahm talking about LIV. And it wasn't that long ago. So that when it happened, that they played that video of him talking about the best golf in the world is the PGA Tour, and I would never leave, and blah, blah, whatever he said. That video was all over social media the next day. And I think that's why people, including me, were really kind of shocked that that's what happened.
So let's take that a step further. Now, all of a sudden, Rory McIlroy's doing an about face. I'm saying, oh, maybe perhaps I was too judgmental about the players going over there and blah, blah, blah.
Here's what I'm going to say about this. And Lord knows I could be wrong because every couple of years I am.
Really?
So maybe this will be the one time. It's been a while. So Rory McIlroy will not go to live. He will not go to LIV. Now, having said that, he doesn't know either what is coming next in terms of the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, the DP World Tour, the Saudis, the fund. Nobody really knows because of how badly every part of this has been handled. And I mean horribly. And we can get into that too. Rory is a very smart guy, as we've all seen. He is just saying, basically, I don't know what's coming down the road. In 2 years, they may all be on the same tour again, all of them. And I think that's where that came from with Rory. I don't think this is the same thing as Jon Rahm saying one thing and then going to live. Rory is too ingrained in tour leadership now, especially now, to ever have that happen. Unless the PGA Tour gets completely blown up, and then, you know, they all may say, hey, we're all going to live. Who knows? But Rory will not be going to live golf.
Okay, so let's, the conspiracy theory, right? If you look at everything that Rory has done over the last year, right? He was the face of the PGA Tour, singing the PGA Tour praises, telling everybody how much he hates LIV.
Right.
And then since that time, over what, the last 6 months, he's talking about how he wants to move back to England. He has done this about face on maybe I was too judgmental. He wants the DP World Tour to change the rules because he definitely is saying Jon Rahm is going to be on the European Ryder Cup team the next time around, right?
Yeah.
So, and now, you know, kind of this sort of thing. I don't know. I'm curious to your point. I'm curious to see, because remember how upset he was at Jay Monahan because he was essentially the scapegoat. These guys, you know, put me out here on an island and now they're doing this, you know, back behind the, you know, back channel kind of deal. I don't know. It just, it feels like, you know, he's kind of warming it up for, and it, what was the quote the last couple of days? He talked about how we're all supposed to be independent contractors. We should be able to decide where and when we're going to play. That sounds an awful lot like LIV to me.
Well, I don't feel that way. I truly don't. And as I said, I could be wrong here, but I don't feel that way with Rory. I think both things can be true. He can say, maybe I was too judgmental and I want to go to England and I want Jon Rahm to be able to play on the Ryder Cup team. That does not necessarily mean he's going to live.
Right.
You know,
I
Chris, with all these guys, they don't know. I mean, every day you look at how the mismanagement of the PGA Tour is staggering in almost every way. And it was all done because they didn't, 2, 3, 4 years ago, they didn't, Jay Monahan and the group didn't look forward. There were sponsors pulling out a couple of years ago from tournaments because they didn't feel like the purses were getting too high and they weren't, the stars weren't playing and all those things. Nobody did anything about it until LIV Golf came. And then all of a sudden, Monahan and all the and Dunn and all those guys are scrambling like crazy to try to figure something out. Well, excuse me, it's mismanaged in every way, and that's why I say, I mean, none of us know what is ahead for professional golf. None of us. And you know me, I'm the guy on the lawn. I'm really sick of it, and most people are too. I know that.
Okay, so let's take all of that. a step further because we've learned that Keith Pelley has resigned from the DP World Tour to go run Maple Leaf Sports. Martin Slumbers of the RNA says this year's going to be his last go round. What do you make of all of that?
Right. Well, those are two different things. And this is coming from, again, shout out to Bob Harrick, because I brought this up with him also. Keith Pelley, first of the DP World Tour. That tour, there have been problems with that tour for a while now. And I don't know all the particulars, but I know that Keith Pelley has been kind of blamed for a lot of these things. And when he gets an offer, he's going with Maple Leaf Sports now, which owns the Raptors, the Maple Leafs, the Toronto Argonauts. There's an MLS team, I think, in Toronto. It's a big deal, this company he's going to. And so it's kind of not surprising that when he had the opportunity to do that, he said yes. And he's moving on. There are huge changes happening on the DP World Tour as well. They're part of the PGA Tour now, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. So he said, see ya. See ya. You guys do what you want. I'm going to Canada. As far as the RNA goes, he's only 63 years old. He's a child compared to me, Martin Slumber. He's a child. But he has been talking for a while about this, and most people would talk about being surprised about things. Most of the people connected with golf in Europe and the RNA knew that this was going to come, and they're not that surprised about it. So, but again, it's another change. I don't know how much that'll affect. Here's the thing, Chris. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Don't tell anybody. Yeah, okay. Don't tell anybody. Most of this stuff, like the DP World Tour, the RNA, the ball rollback, which we haven't even talked about, all of those things that are happening in the world of golf, they don't apply to us. Don't tell anybody. They really don't. I got enough to worry about in terms of taking my dog Blue out in the morning for a walk. I mean, can I make it around the block again? I don't know. Those are the things that I worry about. Is my 17-year-old gonna make it through this semester of high school? You know, those kind of things. So I mean, it's a big deal. You know, the RNA obviously and the DP World Tour. And the PGA Tour and all of it, everything has just changed so much, Chris. It's all changed. And, you know me. I don't like it. you know me.
So with all of this stuff that has transpired,
yeah,
Phil Mickelson vindicated?
No, not to me. And I really don't want to talk about him. I don't. I don't think he's vindicated. Maybe he is. Again, I don't care. I know this isn't good for your show, but there are certain people, and you know who they are. You know, yeah. There's a guy I call the cheater, who I refuse to mention his name. There's a guy that I call the bulk. I don't talk about him. And, you know, Lefty is another one that I don't really care to talk about. He may be vindicated. I don't care. I don't think that he is, because the way he went about it. Here's the other thing. And, you know, talking about LIV Golf, and I will say this up front. I have two very close friends of mine, people I love, who are very involved in LIV Golf, in Keith Hirschland and Jerry Fulk. Very involved. And it has, Keith and I just had a great discussion about this, because it's awkward, because they know how I feel about LIV Golf. And a big part of it is, and I'll say this too, here's the disclaimer. I have nothing but incredible respect and admiration for the production of LIV Golf. What Keith Hirschland and the technical people are doing is staggering. I think I said they had 40 cameras on the golf course. I think he corrected me and said 70 or something. And he's in that truck doing all the, it's amazing. That's not the problem I have with LIV Golf. I'm just one of these guys. I don't care about team golf. I certainly don't care about scramble starts and no cuts and 48 players. And that's not a golf tournament to me. And it never will be. The biggest problem I have with all of them, it's why I have no problem with Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. Because from the beginning, Brooks Koepka said, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to play. I'm taking the money. That's not what Phil Mickelson did. And anybody that talks in the it's growing the game stuff, they're talking, you know, now John Rahm says we can go play in Australia and we're going to introduce it here. And they could have done that before. All of this could have been done before if that's what they truly wanted to do. And that's why I have the feelings I do about Mickelson. I just think he hit everything out of his mouth from the beginning of it, to me was, there's a word I could use, but I won't. Anyway, there, I said it.
All right, so let's switch gears just a little bit. And we talk about the money. And last time that you were on the show, we talked about whether sports is out of control. You had tweeted a picture of Will Chamberlain's 1960 W-2 when he made $37,000. Yeah. Well, now we live in a world where Shohei Ohtani signed a 10-year, $700 million contract with the Dodgers. They signed another Japanese pitcher, Yasu Yamamoto, to a 12-year, $325 million contract. So the Dodgers have invested $1 billion in just two players. You mentioned a minute ago, the PGA Tour is losing sponsors. They lost AT&T to one of the events. Honda is now done. Wells Fargo talked about how they're going to be out. Now we've got John Rahm going to live for who knows how much money. We've heard $300 million, $450 million, $600 million, whatever that is. We got LA Golf coming out with their new putter line that's going to go for somewhere between $500 and
$649. I'm going to get two of them.
Iron sets are $1,200 a piece. I mean, at some point, Matthew, this house of cards has to fall in, doesn't it?
Well, you would think so. I mean, but here's the thing. All of the things you just mentioned are all of them like the Dodgers. They can pay those two guys over 10 years $1 billion. Shohei Ohtani, they've structured it. He's only making $2 million a year now. I mean, they've figured out ways to do it. And the biggest problem with all of it, I'm not talking about LIV Golf. Because that's the Saudis and the fund is a totally different thing. That is unlimited money, unlimited, billions of it. All the other things it's all about TV contracts and money that's being brought in. And so to a lot, you know, what is the Dodger? I remember when the Yankees, everybody, you know, used to talk about, well, they buy championships and all this kind. How can they keep paying these players? Well, the YES Network and the money the Yankee organization was bringing in was staggering and way more than other baseball teams were bringing. It's all tied up in TV money, all the revenue that these clubs are making and teams are making and different things. They wouldn't be doing it if they couldn't. Do you know what I mean? So to all of us, this is like monopoly money. Now, it doesn't even mean, I mean, are you, be honest, when you heard about Yamamoto signing for 300 something million, my reaction was, ooh, that's a bargain. That's chump change. I mean, what, is he half as good as Ohtani? He's only half as good as he? I mean, you hear these figures now. Even the PGA Tour, these events that used to be called, you know, now who knows what they're called. The purse is $20 million. $3.6 million for the winner. It doesn't mean anything to us. Maybe it does to you. Doesn't mean anything to me. 3.6. It doesn't matter if they get 600 grand or 3.6. All of it has become so out of control. And like I say, I just have to make sure my dog poops when I take him for a walk. I'm sorry. Can I say poop on your show?
You can. Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So were you disappointed when you heard that Tiger and Rory's new Top Golf like league got postponed to next year? Were you excited about watching that this month?
I actually was. I was very excited, actually. I think it's a great idea. And I hate that it's postponed for a year. Because again, these guys that are involved with that it's something so different than we've seen. I think it'll be fantastic when they actually get to it. You know, I was very disappointed that it was postponed. I just hope it happens. That's how I feel. I hope it happens a year from now, and I hope I'm around to watch it.
Speaking of something so different, what do you think of Jason Day's pants on Saturday? You looking forward to the baggy look? It can be you.
I love them. I absolutely love them. I mean, I have some really great sweatpants. You know, they have all these different kinds of sweatpants now that you see the commercials all over the place for them. And they're, you know, a certain fabric and they fit so well. And you can, everybody wears them to play golf now. It's not like you have to wear golf pants. Whatever. I've been wearing those for a couple of years now. I saw the first picture of Jason Day from a couple of days ago. I had never seen those particular pants he was wearing. And I went, I'm getting those. I am absolutely getting those. I'm all in on this company, whatever it is that he's with now. We went from the baggy pleated pants to all of a sudden it's gone to like Eric Van Rooyen, those pants that look like Mike McDaniel, the coach of the Miami Dolphins, wears on the sidelines now, which I thought was great. Okay, that's all really good. And now we're going back the other way with Jason Day and this company and those. But I'm all for it. I'd much rather wear baggy than like skin tight stuff.
Well, make sure you wear the pants when you do the video with the practice swing.
Oh, I will.
Marry those two things together, because that's
cool. I will. And I will be sending that video also to that company, because I know there's a place for me in that, you know, lineup of celebrities. Yes.
Sponsorship money. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Good idea.
100%.
You've had a couple of good ideas so far.
All right. So, you know, I can't let you go without a few Eddie and the Cruisers questions. It's, you know, little movie that initially didn't make it in theaters. Then along comes HBO and cable TV, and suddenly it's a cult favorite. It came out a little over 40 years ago. It was the 40th anniversary back last September.
Yeah, that's right, Chris. 40 years ago. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Here it is, 40 years later, we're still talking about it. People still come up to you all the time, want to talk about it. People talk to you about the positive impact that movie played in their lives, right? Yeah. With themselves, family members, all that sort of stuff. I mean, talk about what that's like for you to know that you were in a movie that has had the lifespan that Eddie and the Cruisers had.
It is astounding to me, Chris. And I always say this, and I'll give you another example. I think last time I was on with you, I talked about the special screening, the fundraiser I did for the flood victims in Eastern Kentucky. And that was where I talked about people coming up and telling me why the movie was so important to them. And that night was so emotional to me. But I'll give you another example that just happened a couple days ago. And every time it happens, it floors me. Now, stick with me here, because you know me. I like to go in circles before I actually get to the point of the meat of the story. My dog, who I've mentioned, Blue, his name is 55 pounds, and he's a maniac. And I have not been able, I've taken him to two places to get him bathed and his nails clipped because he goes berserk. He hates water, hates it. And stick with me, there's a reason for it. I'm telling you this story. And I couldn't take it anymore. And I started Googling grooming places in Lexington. And I found a place that was half a mile from my house. And I started reading the reviews, and every review was about this woman, Donna, who owns the business. And with whatever problem you have with a dog, she is the best. Every review. So I said, I'm going to stop in there. I ran over there and I explained what the problem was with my dog. And she was just a phenomenal woman. And I made an appointment to bring Blue in the next day, actually. And I brought Blue in, and they took him back. And Donna said to me, do you live around here? And I said, I live right around the corner, basically. And she said, oh, great. What do you do? And I told her I was on ESPN radio and I had a show. And she went, oh, that's great. And I left. And a couple hours later, I went back to pick Blue up. And I walked in. And she looked at me and she said, you know, you looked really familiar to me when you came in here. And when you said you were on the radio, I thought, oh, well, and I Googled you, she said. And then she said, Eddie and the Cruisers is my favorite movie of all time. Out of nowhere, this woman in this little dog grooming place. And then started telling me why it was so important to her. And she asked questions about different scenes in the movie. And we stood there. And I walked out of there. And just like you just said, it's been 40 years. And it happens all the time. And I couldn't be more grateful. You know, when as an actor, you really, there are so many times where you work and people don't see it, or they don't like it, or, you know, it's not edited the right way, so you look bad, or whatever, a million things. To know that 40 years later, this movie is still being talked about. And as long as you have a show, it will continue to be talked about, I
yes,
think.
It will.
It's amazing, Chris. It really is amazing.
Speaking of scenes in the movie, I couldn't believe, because back in December, I'm scrolling through TeePublic. I'm looking for T-shirts for family members. And all of a sudden, I come across a Tony Martz T-shirt, the nightclub you guys drive up to when we first get introduced to the Tom Berenger character.
Yep.
Do you remember shooting the movie inside of Tony Martz? Because as I was reading more about that scene, the people that were in there weren't just movie extras. They were actually Tony Martz regulars.
Oh, 1,000%. Tony Martz, which is this nightclub, it's a bar nightclub on the Jersey Shore that is, it's not there anymore, by the way. I found out, is legendary to anyone, not only that grew up in South Jersey, but people went there for vacations and spent their entire summers on the Jersey Shore. From all over, from New York City, and from people would drive up from Florida and spend the summer there. And Tony Martz is legendary with people from that area. And I didn't know anything about it. None of us did when we went down there to shoot. And the more we were there, the longer we were there, the more we learned about it. And we see, if you look at the scenes, doing the music in Tony Martz, the shots from the stage out into the crowd, you just look at those people and you know those are not extras. It was amazing there were people came from all around there to be in that movie. And then, you know, of course, while you're shooting, that you finish a scene and they got to reset the lights, and they got, so you end up talking to people wherever you are. I mean, I always do that, any location, but just sitting there and talking to the people about Toni Morse and what Toni Morse meant to them, because the movie took place in the 60s. So all those, a lot of those people, most of them were young enough where they would go, this was my dad's favorite place in the world, Toni Morse. You know, when I was growing up, they would say. Toni Morse was really cool. There, things like that are, I don't know, I'm a lucky guy, Chris.
Matthew, just a couple more before I let you go. And occasionally I have to imagine when you're out driving in the car, On the Dark Side comes on the radio, or 10 to Years comes on the radio. What's it yes. like for you when you're just driving along and all of a sudden one of those songs comes on the radio?
I don't know. I don't like it that much, Chris. I change the channel pretty quickly. you know what I do? I have SiriusXM in the car, and I have two classic stations on SiriusXM, and it On the Dark Side plays pretty regularly. I hear, you know, in the car once every couple of weeks, it'll come on. And I always take a screenshot of it and send it to somebody. And I turn it way up and I sing. I mean, I still got it. I can tell you that.
Of course you do. Don't be silly.
I still got it. And it's amazing. It's just, it's really something.
One more, and I know you were really good friends with Tim Wakefield. We lost him way too young, and his wife, Stacy, this past year. Talk about who Tim Wakefield was on and off the field, whether it was the baseball field or the boy. Golf course.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Tim, I met Tim as a lifelong Yankee fan, of course. I met Tim Wakefield, who, if your listeners don't know, was a knuckleball pitcher for the Red Sox, first for the Pirates, and then when he got really good, he was with the Red Sox. And I was invited, again, because I'm so incredibly blessed, to play in a celebrity golf tournament in Atlanta that was Phil Niekro's celebrity golf tournament. Phil Niekro, the king of the knuckleballers, actually worked with Tim on his knuckleball. And I got down, I was living in LA, and I got down to Atlanta. And we were standing in the lobby after everybody had checked in. They were going to take all of us out to dinner the first night. And I, being, you know, the incredible jock sniffer that I am and have always been my whole life, I knew who Tim was. And he was in the lobby. And I walked up to him, and we were all introducing ourselves to each other. And I said, hey, Tim, Matthew Lawrence. And he said, oh, I know. And I said, well, I know who you are, too. This is another example of giving crap the second you meet somebody. And Tim, I said to Tim, because I'm a smartass, I said, not only do I know who you are, I do an impression of you. And he looked at me, he said, you do? I said, yeah, here, I'll do it for you. And these people were standing around. And in slow motion, I made a pitching motion, threw the ball to the plate, and then whipped my head around as it was hit out of the ballpark. That was my impression of Tim. And he laughed, everybody laughed. And Tim, this is pretty amazing, instantly says, I do an impression of you, too. And I said, you do. He said, yeah, here it is. And then he made it like it was the clapboard you use on the set, you know, before you do the scene. And he went, ready? Take 48. And he clapped his hands together. And it was
good for Timmy.
Maybe the best comeback, instantaneous comeback of any time that's happened to me. And from that day forward, we were incredible friends. And the more I found out about Tim, He had a, he's from Melbourne, Florida. And when he first got into the big leagues, he was friendly with a woman there who she and another woman had developmentally disabled children. And those kids were taken care of the first few years in schools, but then there was no place for them to go. And so they started a school in an apartment, these two women. And little by little, people heard about it that had children that needed help. And it started to get bigger. And Tim got involved with them. And they started a place called the Space Coast Early Intervention Center. And all of us that went and played in Tim's celebrity tournament in Melbourne, Florida, we would go out to the center and we would spend a day with the kids. It was the greatest thing in the world. And the first year that I did this, and we all did this, they had an auction one night of this celebrity golf tournament. And Tim had all these baseball guys, all his Red Sox teammates and other guys from the big leagues were there. And we'd all been at auction before, and you try to raise as much money as you can. And all I remember about that first night is, and my friend Peter Jason and I were the auctioneers. And we were up on the stage, and they had all these signed things and stuff. So we would say, okay, here we have one of Tim Wakefield's jerseys that he autographed. Can I get $200 for it? And somebody would raise their hand, and you would go, okay, I got $200. And all of a sudden, for some reason, I remember Derek Lowe, who was also a pitcher on the Red Sox with Tim. Derek Lowe raised his hand and went, $10,000.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm getting choked up. Damn it. And they raised so much money. It was unbelievable. And then that center became, people from all over the country started sending their kids to this center. And that was Tim. That's who he was. He did a tremendous, as you know, you're a Red Sox fan. He did a tremendous amount of work in Boston, in the community, and in Melbourne. He won the Roberto Clemente Award for his community work. And it's just horrible, shocking. He was so young, and this has happened, you know, again, way too many times recently with different people, but Tim was an incredible human being, as was Stacy, his wife, and just a tremendous loss. Tremendous.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Matthew, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing? Listen to your shows, plus follow you on social media.
Yeah, well, the social media is the important one because I'm going to post a video of my perfect swing.
Exactly.
So, okay. I don't call it X. I'm sorry. I'm on Twitter, at RealLauro5, LAURO and the number 5. Or you can go to WLXG.com. Any day I'm on from 10 to noon Eastern time. And you hit listen live at WLXG.com. You can hear the show and Backspin Golf 8:03 every Sunday morning. Same way, WLXG.com.
And I love the fact that your Twitter handle is RealLauro5 because what a great Nomar Garcia Parra fan you always were. So that's fantastic that you included that in your handle.
Yeah, I'm glad you recognized that, Chris. That's funny.
Matthew, I love you, my friend. I can't thank you enough for joining me again. You're fantastic. You're one of my all-time favorite people on the planet. So blessed that we are friends, and I'm already looking forward to the next time I get to talk to you.
Back at you, pal. Right back at you. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, my friend. All the best.
You too.
That is the great Matthew Lawrence, folks. And like I say at the top, they don't come bigger or better than that guy. I love him. He has been a wonderful friend and mentor to me over the many years. And he started out as one of my favorite actors of all time. As I've said many, many times, Eddie and the Cruisers is one of the top five movies that I've ever seen, my favorite. And he was in it. And it's just amazing now that we have become friends. And he's very, very special to me, as is his brother, Mitch. So I hope you enjoyed that segment. Be sure to check him out, Backspin Golf. It is my regular 8:03 a.m. Eastern tea time every Sunday morning. His show's fantastic. Matthew's fantastic. He has great guests as well. So please check him out. Make it a part of your regular Sunday morning golf content. I can't wait to catch up with him again soon. He is just so much fun to be around. He's a joy, and he always brings a smile to my face. Again, I hope you enjoyed that segment. Be sure to come back and check out the show next week. Up with me is going to be Tom Patrick, Megan Francella, Steve Scott, and Brendan Walsh. As always, you are the best supporters in the history of podcast. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.